the exception to the rulers. As we go now to Jeremy Scahill, who is in The Hague. Jeremy, are you with us? Jeremy, are you there?
Well, Amy, the reaction in Belgrade, as I've heard it from people that I've spoken to on the telephone, is one of feeling that Mr. Milosevic certainly had the upper hand in court today. As listeners of Democracy Now! Are well aware of, many people in Serbia believe, as Mr. Milosevic does, that this is an illegitimate court, that it has no jurisdiction over him, and that it is a private court for American justice and biased against Serbs. This is an opinion shared by people who are also against Slobodan Milosevic. I think that this is also making it very difficult for some of the very pro-West politicians within Yugoslavia to try to convince people that cooperating with this institution is the best way forward, given that Mr. Milosevic's defense has been so strong against the tribunal in these two appearances so far. But the wheels of justice, or injustice, as some would say, at the Hague Tribunal spin very slowly, and so we could be looking at another year before Slobodan Milosevic actually comes to trial. There are a lot of wild cards there. Perhaps the biggest right now is, what is Mr. Milosevic's defense going to be? In closing, Amy, I just want to say, if people are interested in more reports from The Hague, they can go to the Free Speech Radio News website at www.fsrn.org. And I'd also like to say that I stand in solidarity with you, Amy, with Juan Gonzalez, and all the folks at the Pacifica campaign. And I hope that someday we all see very soon Betsy Wash and Steve Yasko no longer in charge of this network.
Well, Jeremy, I want to thank you reporting from The Hague and the trial right now of Slobodan Milosevic. Jeremy Scahill, who's been living in Yugoslavia for the past year, traveled to The Hague to cover this trial. And you are listening to Democracy Now! The people of East Timor went to the polls today in overwhelming numbers in their first nationwide elections to choose an assembly that will write the constitution for the world's newest nation. 2 years ago, the East Timorese voted in a historic UN-supervised referendum for their independence after 24 years of brutal Indonesian occupation. As soon as the results of the vote were announced, however, Indonesian troops and their militia allies burnt East Timor to the ground, displaced virtually the entire population, and forced hundreds of thousands of people from the country. Voters in the elections today will choose from 16 parties for an 88-member assembly that will write the country's constitution in just 3 months. East Timor will become independent sometime next year. The Revolutionary Front for an Independent East Timor, or FRETLIN, is expected to dominate the balloting. But East Timor is still far from being a truly independent country. 9,000 UN troops continue to occupy the territory. East Timor will celebrate its independence almost wholly dependent upon foreign aid. International agencies such as the World Bank and the IMF are creating an East Timorese economy almost from scratch, while foreigners already dominate the local economy, which caters to the army of well-paid UN workers and international aid staff who fill the grocery stores and the restaurants priced in Australian dollars. And more than 2 years after they destroyed East Timor, not a single Indonesian general has been brought to justice. We go first to Dili, the capital of East Timor. Just a few hours ago, I spoke with José Ramos Horta, the Nobel Peace Prize winner and spokesperson for more than two decades for the Timorese resistance. And I talked to him about the elections today. Can you describe what today is like in Dili?
Not only in Dili, but in the districts, in the countryside. I have been to numerous villages by helicopter. The situation is extremely calm. Not one single incident, not one single case of violence to be reported throughout the whole campaign now for 2 months, culminating today in the election process. Not one single incident. Voter turnout in some places have been 100%. In most places, about 95-98%. I think the overall turnout at the end will be between 95 and 100%. It is simply extraordinary. I am extremely pleased. Our people have shown to us, shown to the world, how remarkable they are.
Can you explain the significance of today's elections, what they're for?
This is the election for a constituent assembly. People are voting deputies, electing deputies from political parties, independent candidates. There are 30% women candidates. This is the highest percentage of women candidates, I believe, anywhere in the world, with the exception of the Nordic countries, maybe. The constituent assembly will draft our constitution, the first constitution ever in our history. They will have 3 months to do the job and then set the date for presidential elections sometime next year, early next year, followed soon by independence, also sometime next year, maybe April, May next year, would be formal accession to independence.
This day is also particularly significant, August 30th. Can you describe what you were doing 2 years ago today?
2 years ago, I was in Sydney, Australia, voting there with many of my exiled compatriots. Today, I went to vote for the first time ever here in my own country at 7 a.m. I thought I would be the first when the polling stations opened. Instead, there were like hundreds of people ahead of me. But then the electoral people asked me, pleaded with me to pass through the queue because the media kept waiting, and it was disturbing, disrupting the voters. So I voted and then went to other places.
And what about the significance of Xanana Gushmao announcing that he will run for president?
It's very reassuring to the people of East Timor, the fact that he's announced to run, because he's a very stable force. People know him, trust him, adore him, and we are all very relieved that he's running for president next year. That helped also calming the situation.
What kind of constitution do you hope to see written in this next few months?
Of a constitution that model after the constitution of any democratic state, and probably the system that go for will be modeled after the Portuguese semi-presidential system. The president is elected directly by the people without executive powers, but the authority to dissolve the parliament, to control the actions of the government. The president is a sort of mediator, conciliator. He has far more powers than, obviously, in a parliamentary system, but not executive powers like in the U.S. system.
What are the biggest issues Timor faces today?
Well, now and in the next few years, job creation. We must create jobs for our people. We must adopt laws to strengthen our courts, our institutions, encourage foreign investments, create the conditions, the environment conducive to foreign investors coming to invest here and create jobs.
And what do you feel is the most important role of the international community?
Continue to stay engaged, to support the development of our economy. Elections are not everything. Now we must consolidate the institutions, and the international community cannot pack and leave just because we have had a successful election.
José Ramos Horta, 1996 Nobel Peace Prize winner and foreign minister for East Timor, speaking to us from Dili, the capital of East Timor. Hey, Lay, Lay, Lay. It is a song on the CD, Free Xanana, Free East Timor, singing for a free East Timor. Yes, after 400 years of Portuguese colonialism and a quarter of a century of the brutal Indonesian occupation, the people of East Timor are on their way to having their own country. Today, historic elections for a constituent assembly that will write the constitution. We just heard from José Ramos Horta, and now we go to Los Palos, East Timor, where Joaquim Fonseca is standing by. He is with the East Timorese human rights group Yayasan HAK. He's an official observer of today's elections and has been an active part of the NGO working group on the Constitution. Welcome to Democracy Now! From East Timor, Joaquim Fonseca.
Thanks very much. In fact, now I'm standing at Baucar Airport to be able to be in the network coverage. We just departed from Los Palos as soon as the last polling station we observed was closed.
Can you talk about today? Where did you start?
In fact, we started from the westernmost polling station within Los Palos district, which was situated in Ililai village, and we were there when the officers started to seal the ballot boxes, and we, in fact, saw the first vote done by the first voters.
Can you talk about the preparations for today's election?
Well, in terms of the preparation, as we have stated in through different ways, to different medias. Up to last week, actually, the level of information that people receive about the purpose of this election was still of our concern. And even today, during the in our observation, we talked to some of the voters who have voted, and the answer when we asked them the question whether they are voting for president or for voting for something else, in fact, their answers were varied from voting for a president, voting for a constituent assembly, and so on. So basically, there are some concerns about the genuine political involvement of the people. The voter turnout is one thing, but it doesn't necessarily represent the conscious political involvement of the people in the process.
And can you talk about how people went about the process of running for the Constituent Assembly? For example, how many people will be in this assembly that will write East Timor's constitution?
Well, as you understand, the number of the constituent assembly members would be 88. We expected all the 88 members would be those that are capable and dedicated to do their work. But actually, we hope that we can reach beyond just using the capacity that these 88 people have, but also to be able to get more assistance from other groups that are more willing to help in the technical issues, in a way that we can really have a good constitution, as it was described, as I was listening, by Mr. Ramos Horta, as a model for a most democratic country in the world.
When we come back, Joaquim Fonseca, I want to ask you about the difference between Bishop Bello, also winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, his call for people needing justice in East Timor, and Xanana Gusmão, who's just announced her president, calling for reconciliation. I want to talk about the human rights issue today in East Timor and surprising offer by the Indonesian military to train East Timor's military. We'll also be joined by John Miller in the United States to talk about the U.S. role in the reconstruction of East Timor. Again, we're speaking with Joaquim Fonseca. He is East Timorese with the East Timorese human rights group Yayasan HAK. He's an official observer of today's historic elections, and he is speaking with us from Los Palos, East Timor. You're listening to Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
It's 9:39. You're listening to Democracy Now! On KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, or KFCF in Fresno. This is The Real Democracy Now!, produced today by Amy Goodman and her team at Downtown Community Television in New York, not at the studios of WBAI, where it's usually produced. If you'd like to protest Pacifica's latest actions against Democracy Now!, you can call Executive Director Bessie Wash at 202-588-0999, extension 348, or you can email her at bmwpacifica@aol.com. For further information, you can go to savepacifica.net. Stay tuned.
You are listening to Democracy Now! Free Speech Radio as we continue in East Timor, in Los Palos, where Joaquim Fonseca of Yayasan HAK, a human rights group in East Timor, is an official observer to these elections, speaking to us from Los Palos. I sort of reeled off a number of questions I want to ask you, but let me start, Joaquim, with the main issues you see need to be addressed by the writing of the Constitution that this Constituent Assembly will do over the next few months.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Basically, this is the process of nation building, and this is a continuing process since the starting of it in 1975, and this constitution is to lay the foundation, is to lay the role of game for the implementation for the administration of this nation that is to be built. So basically, everything that is important for the country is crucial to be discussed in the constitution. Now, of course, we would need a strong justice system. We would need the rights of the people that have just been refreshed from very oppressed system are to be protected in the constitution. And all those issues that are regarded important by the people, all those issues that people have made the Constitutional Commission recorded.
Joaquim, on the issue of human rights, what is Yayasan's position on what the Constitution can address?
First of all, the Constitution have to lay the rule for the country to be able to deal with the past human rights issues that which impacts are still being felt by the East Timorese at the moment, and also to ensure guarantees for future human rights issues. That is, in general, what we think should be there in the Constitution in relation to human rights issues.
This debate between Bishop Bello and Xanana Gushmao might surprise people on the outside, considering Xanana Gushmao was the rebel leader fighting in the mountains. Bishop Bello, the man of peace and reconciliation on the ground for all of these years, yet it's Bishop Bello who is calling for justice for the people of East Timor right now, while Xanana Gusmão is talking about reconciliation. What is your response?
I would not comment on any of those statements separately. Instead, I would like to look at those statements in the process of nation building in East Timor. First, reconciliation, justice, of course, is important because it is the precondition for reconciliation. So I would not try to confront those two issues, and not necessarily trying to merely attribute those ideas and those statements to those two figures. In the question of nation building, of course, it is very important that the whole people in this country, everybody in this country, agree to the notion of nation building. And therefore, it is very important to address the issues that arose from the disagreement that took place around the notion of nation building. In fact, it was accepted, it was agreed that people might have ideas other than building East Timor as an independent nation, but also there were practices that were actually violating the democratic principles, and in fact violent ways were used, and therefore for human rights violations have occurred. And in the context of nation building process in East Timor, it is very important that those issues are addressed, and conditions are created for people to reconcile with each other in a way that the process of nation building can go in a much smoother way.
Joachim, what about the offer of the Indonesian general, again, for people who aren't familiar with East Timor, over the last quarter of a century, the Indonesian military killed more than 200,000 Timorese, but the offer of Kiki Shianakri to for the Indonesian military to train the Timorese military?
I wish that we could appreciate that offer, but in fact, as a response to what the Indonesian military has done in East Timor, from those trainings that they have had, and as our contribution to the process in Indonesia, we would think that that offer should be suspended until the Indonesian military itself deal with the issues of human rights violation both in Indonesia as well as elsewhere, including in East Timor. And to be able to do so, it is very important that the reform takes place within the Indonesian army itself. That is a general's offer, but we think the Indonesian army is not in a position to provide for any new armed forces or defense forces in the world a training that would take into consideration the issues of human rights.
Among others.
Furthermore, I would say that that is rather an insult to the people of East Timor for an Indonesian general to make this statement before even reconsidering that brutal actions have been conducted against the East Timorese people in the past.
Joachim Fonseca, we're also joined by John Miller of the East Timor Action Network in the United States. John, on this issue that Joachim brings up of the Indonesian military having to be reformed and deal with its own human rights situation before it comes back to East Timor. Can you talk about the Bush administration and its stance? For a period now, the U.S. has cut off military aid to the Indonesian military. What's happening now?
Yeah, and the during the violence in September 1999, President Clinton suspended all ties with military ties with Indonesia, and for the most part, there's been a few exceptions. It's held. There's been little or no contact, no arms sales, no training. The Bush administration, pretty much since it came into office, has been pressing very hard and very publicly to reestablish some of those contacts. The main roadblock is Congress. Congress has placed in law some restrictions, and the ones that aren't covered by law, many members of Congress are very wary of any resumption of those ties. So they've been pressing very hard and very publicly. High officials have been coming to Indonesia to raise it. They used three kind of very awkward arguments, we would say. One is that the Indonesian military needs training from the U.S. to improve its human rights record, and clearly 30 years of training never had that impact. And interestingly, the former foreign minister of Australia commented that Australian training only didn't improve Indonesia's human rights. It just made the Indonesian military more efficient killers. And then the another argument is that because the military didn't interfere with Megawati becoming president in the impeachment by the Indonesian parliament, that they should be praised for allowing this peaceful transition. All indications are Megawati is much, much closer to the Indonesian military than Wahid ever was. Wahid at times was quite critical of the military and pressed quite hard for reform. And there was absolutely no reason for the Indonesian military not to support Megawati, not to allow that process to go forward, not to ignore Wahid's requests that the military defend his presidency. And thirdly, they argue that the Indonesian military is the only institution that can contribute to Indonesia's stability. Indonesia is going through quite a number of political and social upheavals. And again, the military, you know, if you look at Aceh or West Papua or the conflict in the Moluccas, the military seems to be in there, either formally and officially or elements of it, creating conflict. The human rights abuses in Aceh are actually what's driving the Achenese to both rebel militarily and protest nonviolently for independence. The conflict in the Moluccas between Christian and Muslim communities was clearly exacerbated by Indonesian military and police officers taking sides, one side or the other, and supplying arms to both sides and exacerbating that conflict. So I think it's very important that people in the United States, listeners here, protest to Congress, protest to the administration, that no military ties should be resumed until certain congressional conditions have been met, including a tribunal for East Timor, including return of the refugees, and until the military in Indonesia shows it can and is capable of respecting human rights.
Joaquim Fonseca, do you think an international war crimes tribunal should actually take place on the soil of East Timor?
The fundamental issue that we think should be addressed by the international community is the issue of human rights violation in the past, and therefore I agree with you that an international tribunal need to be established. That has been our position ever since the violence took place. We do not have any preference as to where the international tribunal should be established. Because I think that is a question that should come later. The first question is whether or not this political conjuncture, the international community can now open their eyes and see that, in fact, only an international tribunal can solve the past human rights violations in East Timor, especially those during the process of referendum in 1999, or shall they now let Indonesia to deal with it? I think that is the most fundamental question that need to be answered first.
Joaquim Fonseca, there are going to be major protests against the World Bank and the IMF in just a few weeks at the end of September in Washington, D.C. Fretilin is the major party in East Timor, and one of its leaders, Maria Alkatiri, has been talking about, for example, public granaries and, I mean, the whole issue of nation building. Where does the World Bank and IMF fit in the sense of public ownership of common ground? Do you see conflict there?
I would like to ask you to make your question more specific.
What are your concerns? Do you have concerns about the World Bank and the IMF in East Timor and the direction that World Bank or IMF driven development will go?
All the issues that you talked about were issues that are new for the East Timorese people, because we have never lived in an economic situation where we can clearly see the impact of the intervention of the World Bank and the IMF. However, there were lessons that have been drawn from the experiences of other countries, including the closest one to us, which is Indonesia, and many other developed countries, including those in Latin America. In the issue of the presence of the World Bank and IMF in East Timor, at the moment, especially the World Bank is functioning to administer the trust fund that contributed by donor countries to East Timor, and in fact, so far, even though there are people are alerted, groups. Oversight groups here are alerted about any possibility to happen from there, to occur from there. But at the moment, I am not advised of any real issue that is of concern, I mean serious concern, in the intervention of the World Bank. In regard to the IMF, this is a question that probably I am not very much in the position to answer, because the portion of technical economic issues, and this is related to the issue of dollarization in East Timor, the use of the U.S. dollar as the currency in East Timor, and we learned that the IMF has been pushing for this. And, of course, it would be very interesting to look at the economic side of it, which, in fact, I could not provide you with any precise answer, as I have very little knowledge about that issue.
Well, we only have 30 seconds, and speaking to you, Joaquim, on the ground in East Timor, your feeling at the end of this historic day with your polls just having closed?
My feeling, well... I'm feeling very optimistic, but it is still a long way to go. We are, of course, optimistic, but the constitution is the first one and the new one, and nobody is experienced in writing it, so we might have to accept some failure, and it is more important that we are prepared for future amend to this constitution as well as any other practices in relation to that. We cannot set things right at the start.
Joaquim Fonseca, I want to thank you for being with us from Yayasan Hak on the ground in Los Palos, East Timor, and John Miller of East Timor Action Network at etan.org on the web. an historic day in East Timor. And that does it for today's program. If you'd like to write to us, mail@democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams and Brad Simpson. Anthony Sloan is our music maestro and engineer. Errol Maitland, our spiritual technical advisor. Thanks to Miranda Kennedy and Chase Pearson. Thanks also to our sister station, KPFA, and to Roy of Hollywood. Yes, makes us believe in Hollywood stars. And special thanks to all our affiliate stations who are carrying today's broadcast. We are Pacifica. Today broadcasting from DCTV in the firehouse of Engine Company 31. What better place to be in the midst of a firestorm? In exile from the embattled studios of WBAI, the studios of the band and the fire, the studios of our listeners, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.